Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right, I'm going to count this as good news to start off some business news here on this Monday morning, the Unleash Prosperity Hotline. And frankly, they link right back to their Unleash Prosperity website as well here. America's mineral reserves unlocking our $12 trillion treasure chest. $12 trillion treasure chest. That's with a T. Wow, that is crazy. Let me see here. I will actually answer the call on my end here. I think I can do that. I think we've got Evelyn Pyburn with us on the phone lines here as I talk about our $12 trillion treasure chest. I'm just going to do it live. Yeah, Finley, you might have to reset the phone system on your end or reset your computer maybe. But I think Evelyn Pyburn, is that you on the phone lines or maybe another caller?
No, this is Evelyn.
Hey, all right. Good morning. How you doing? I figured that was you. That's why I thought I'll just pick up the call live here. What the heck?
Okay, well, I guess I'm ready. Are you?
Right, we're ready. We're rocking and rolling. Well, the story I was just sharing, I was checking the Unleash Prosperity Hotline out earlier this morning, and President Trump's new director of the U.S. Geological Survey, they just published this report identifying there is approximately $12 trillion, that's with a T, in mineral resources that could be developed in the United States. $12 trillion worth of mineral resources. And yet we're dependent on China right now, which is what the Trump administration is trying to change.
Yeah, I heard that. I don't remember exactly where, but I just heard it this morning that Montana has a rare earth project that is on his list over at Sheep Creek, and I think we've talked about that before, that they have discovered an incredible find of rare earth metals, and that they've been working on developing that, and apparently we're on the list, so that's really good news.
Yeah, I think that was Dennis Bragg in his Montana State News Network report around maybe, at least we had it, you might have heard it somewhere else too, but at least I know we had it in our 6:35 news break here earlier this morning. So, you know, you look to $13 trillion, and I did put a note out to the U.S. Geological Survey to see if the director would want to join us on the program here. I mean, talk about what that would mean. I mean, it reminds me of Jesse Ramos from Americans for Prosperity Montana. When he joined us back in Washington, D.C., he talked about, you know, his speech at the energy conference where he pointed out how, you know, copper from just one mine near Libby, Montana alone could rebuild the entire United States electric energy grid two times over, you could do that just from one mine that we could get up and running near Libby alone. All right, well, Evelyn's got some great news to share with us here this morning. I'm checking out the Big Sky Business Journal hot sheet right now, manufacturing strong, and some other news. Grads face a job crunch. We'll talk about that more with Evelyn Pyburn from the Big Sky Business Journal right after this.
5,000 Ashley Dvorkin with a Fox Celebrity Profile with Jennifer Goodwin and Kihoi Kwan of Zootopia 2. The sequel follows detectives Judy and Nick on the case of a mysterious reptile who turns Zootopia upside down. The original animated comedy grossed more than $1 billion worldwide. Goodwin said coming back 10 years later was a great celebration and a little nerve-wracking.
After having seen it with my children a million times, I felt right at home going back into production, but I was nervous seeing number two because I felt like the bar was set so high with number one. And then we left, and the first time I saw it screened, it was just my husband and me, and in the theater, controversially, he was like, I think this might be better than the first movie. And I was like, I don't choose between my children.
I know why number two is better. Gary Gasnay.
I do agree.
I grew up watching Disney animated films. They made a big impact in my childhood, and just knowing that these movies is going to go on and influence and have a positive effect on millions of kids. How cool is that?
Ashley Dvorkin, Fox News.
This winter.
Broadcasting live across the Big Sky, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, I mentioned this manufacturing report that I saw here in the Big Sky Business Journal hot sheet. Let's get to that story here in just a second. But first, Evelyn, during the break, you and I were talking about a report you came across concerning healthcare in Montana and the ability to retain residents, the residencies, you know, the doctors that are straight out of med school that come to Montana to do their residency here. Apparently, Billings Clinic, you were telling me, is doing a really good job at retaining those residents to stay in Montana after their residency is complete. So kind of another good news story to talk about here this morning.
Yes. Well, you know, we've all heard over and over again that Billings' top business category is healthcare, but Billings Clinic is doing what they're doing is helping the industry throughout the state in that they are training the next generation of rural physicians. Roughly 65% of rural counties face a shortage of primary care physicians in their communities, but it's even worse than that in Montana. The need is really dire. And research shows that a rural background is one of the strongest predictors of whether or not a student decides to become a rural physician. Yet the number of medical students from rural communities has been steadily declining over the past 15 years to where only about 5% of most medical students come from rural areas. But the Billings Clinic, they have a different story to tell. Since launching their internal medicine residency program in 2014, the clinic has graduated 75 physicians, with half of them now practicing in rural communities. The program outcomes stand out amid the national trend, where only about 11% of physicians wind up working in rural communities or areas. And according to the administrators, the interest in working in rural communities is growing. And they noted that, by the way, you know, I mean, I'm sure we all know this, but anyhow, Billings Clinic serves a huge area that includes eastern Montana, the western edges of North and South Dakota, and northern Wyoming. So this is a really good, very positive impact economically and health-wise, and it's just a super good story.
Yeah, and then into the western part of the state with the Logan Health Alliance there as well. Yeah, yeah, no, that's interesting because, I mean, that's the challenge, right? Is like, okay, you get people that come through Montana in any industry. Maybe they come here to get their start, and then they're off to the big city. They're off for this opportunity or that opportunity. How do you keep – frankly, when it comes to first-year educators, teachers, that's a challenge Montana has had over the years where they're, you know, some of the other states that have surrounded Montana – that utilize their natural resources a little more, well, they're able to pay entry-level teachers more. So then they get these entry-level teachers to move to Wyoming or somewhere, for example. Well, then what ends up happening? Well, you meet some friends, you meet a significant other potentially, and then now that's where you can likely spend the rest of your life. And so now you got these Montana kids that are in these other states as teachers. Now, of course, that's starting to change now that, you know, with the Republican governor and the Republican legislature, they actually were the ones to boost entry-level teacher pay. You know, the Democrats, when they were in charge for 16 years, couldn't boost entry-level teacher pay, but they sure lined the pockets of the bureaucrats at the top, didn't they?
Yeah, well, it is really... It's just, you know, there's a lot of things that you see happening here that is so good for young people and in improving opportunities. And I think this probably blends in with the general interest of living in communities like you find in Montana. I mean, you know, Montana is growing hugely from out-of-state people, you know, looking for a quieter, more normal place to live, I guess you might say. But and I think this is part of it.
That's interesting. That's you know, after COVID-19 and Blue City craziness. Yeah, I think you've touched on something to where you know, Montana's healthcare industry can capitalize off of this. It's still a challenge because of Obamacare and federal government intrusions that have just destroyed things for a lot of doctors. But it used to be that a lot of young people would want to go to the big city and experience the big city life. You know, New York City, you could go to Broadway and you could go do this and do that. And now people are like, oh, my goodness, I don't want to be in these big cities. I'd rather just live, you know, a smaller city or a smaller town lifestyle. Yeah, so maybe that's partly what they're capitalizing on here.
Well, I hope so. It's better to keep our own than transport newcomers, I guess. I mean, and that's something that both teachers have been complaining about, is that we educate them and then ship them off to other states, and we need to encourage our young people to stay in Montana. And a lot of them are returning. You know, they go out and they establish themselves in the world, and some of them create new businesses, and they're coming back to Montana and bringing that expertise and businesses back here. So it's
that's right. In fact, kind of, shortly after he was elected governor, that's exactly who Governor Gianforte targeted, were those people that grew up in Montana or went to college in Montana but had to go elsewhere for opportunity. And he basically said, hey, now there's opportunity in Montana. We're changing things back here. We're making it a place where you can thrive and do business, and we don't punish people for being successful like we used to. Yeah, very interesting. All right, we'll get into the manufacturing success story coming up here in Montana right after this.
The Dean's List with Janice Dean.
The winner of Alaska's famous Fat Bear Contest makes today's Dean's List. And the big prize goes to Bear 32, better known as Chunk, rising to the top in the final round of the annual fan favorite competition. Chunk weighed in at 1,200 pounds and was unstoppable in the final round. The announcement read, quote, 32 Chunk clinches the crown. Fat Bear Week 2025 wrapped up with a plumtastic finale, as the junk in the trunk of 32 Chunk proved too much for Bear 856. Heavy is the bear that wears the crown. Fat Bear Week is an online bracket-style competition where fans around the world vote for their favorite large bears, courtesy of webcams watching the bears as they chow down on salmon before hibernation. And while Chunk walked away with this year's crown, the Park Service reminded everyone that in the end, every bear is a winner, and special thanks to all the salmon. Janice Dean, Fox News.
When I smoke weed, I get lost in the music. I like to isolate each instrument. The rhythmic bass, the harmonies on the piano, sticky melody.
Hey, careful, babe. There's someone crossing the street.
Sorry, I didn't see him there.
If you feel different, you drive different. Don't drive high. It's dangerous and illegal everywhere. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordland.
President Trump this past Thursday lifted the 40% tariffs he imposed in July on Brazilian food imports, reversing a policy that has raised U.S. consumer costs and strained agricultural markets, the administration says. The announcement removes duties on Brazilian beef, coffee, cocoa, and fruit. The rollback follows similar action last week, easing food tariffs from other countries as the administration reassesses trade measures that contributed to grocery prices. Brazil supplies about one-third of U.S. coffee and has become a major source of beef for the U.S. market. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick said the president aimed to wipe the slate clean after earlier broad tariff threats, calling the step a shift toward affordability. Groups like the U.S. Cattlemen's Association are urging the administration to prioritize U.S. beef producers. They said in a statement that, quote, the most recent announcement on the cancellation of 40% tariffs following the early removal of the 10% reciprocal tariff marks an inconsistent and unsafe trade strategy. They continued saying that easing restrictions with Brazil, a country with documented history of forced labor, deforestation, and product integrity issues in the beef sector, is alarming. They concluded saying these actions signal an increase in administrative focus on sourcing foreign beef precisely when domestic producers need clear signals for reinvestment. I'm Lane Nordland.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, back to business here with Evelyn Pyburn from the Big Sky Business Journal. Evelyn, always great to have you on the show. Walk us through these numbers when it comes to Montana manufacturing that you've rolled up in the Big Sky Business Journal hot sheet here this morning.
Well, this is a really, really good news story. Montana manufacturing sector continues to grow, which is so good because our economy is based on manufacturing, and that's where most wealth is created. So we have other economic sectors, but they primarily delve into an exchange of wealth. But manufacturing is where new wealth is generated. And in the past, it has tended to be Montana's weakest industry. But it has been gaining ground over the past couple of decades, and it generated $3 billion in production over the past year, according to the Bureau of Business and Economic Research in Missoula. And in 2024, it generated more than $2 billion in earnings. In fact, Montana manufacturing gross domestic product has grown 7% faster than the national average since 2020. Montana exports grew strongly in 2024, increasing by 10%. And, of course, that's important because a lot of the things that we make here, you know, you send them out to the rest of the country or the world. And manufacturers have reported a cooling in business activity in 2024, as well as reduced rates of capital investment and labor, but most said they expect modest growth in 2025. So hopefully, you know, this is a trend that will continue. And I think it contributes to another report from the Federal Reserve in the 9th District, of which Montana is one of several mid-northern states, with the Dakotas, Wisconsin, Minnesota. And Montana is at the top of gross domestic product production in comparison to those other states, and it's risen very rapidly, I mean dramatically, since about 2020. So, we're doing really well in Montana, especially when you see things like manufacturing booming. And I really think we can say that from all of the reports over the past year or two of companies relocating in Montana. So this is really super good news.
Yeah, and I would just say, too, if you're somebody out there who's interested in, you've got an idea, you want to figure out how to manufacture it, how to set up your manufacturing line or whatever, hey, reach out. You know, they've got last week when I was at the Farm Bureau Convention, I caught up with some of the extension agents from MSU Extension, but they've also got the Montana Manufacturing Extension Center as well, which is, I've talked with manufacturers across the state, say what a valuable resource that is. So there are some tools in the toolbox if you're looking at getting started and jumping into that line of work. By the way, I don't know if you heard it. Was it last week or the week before? Ray Thompson, who was the founder of SemiTool, now Applied Materials in Kalispell, we got a great random phone call from him. He was telling us how back in the day when he was getting SemiTool up and running, the state of Montana, somebody told him that it was state law forcing him and other, you know, small businesses, it grew to be a larger business, of course, that they had to provide maternity coverage for every woman that worked for the company, whether the woman was going to have a baby or not. And what was so great about the story was he says, we didn't follow that law. And we told them we weren't going to follow the law. He said, why would I pay for maternity insurance for women when our company will just pay for the whole birth anyway? Well, wasn't that, what a great thing done by a Montana employer, but also like, why are we paying for insurance for people who don't need it, that don't even use it, when you can just pay for the birth, pay for the cost of the birth, all together?
Yeah. Well, I remember him speaking at an event by the Montana Manufacturing Extension Center when not long I don't remember how long he'd been in business, but he talked at length about how Montana was, and probably they still are to some extent, but they tax the machinery of manufacture. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people can bring in millions of dollars worth of equipment to generate production and jobs and everything, and Montana just taxes them to death.
Yeah, that was the business equipment tax, which is why Governor Gianforte has been working to significantly chop away at that. Yeah, because it just discourages investment. So instead,
one of the stupidest ideas.
Yeah, because then what would you do? You'd I don't know if I want to expand. I'll get hammered on the taxes, whether I use the equipment or not, whether the equipment brings in money or not, or they would just place the equipment in another state. Yeah, it's just one of the dumbest taxes out there. All right. Story, but I heard Woke Buster. All I can picture is David Noble, who joins us for the Woke Update of the Week on Thursdays, dressed up like a Ghostbuster with the backpack on, but it's got Woke Buster instead of Ghostbuster on the side of it. All right, Evelyn, thanks for sticking around for a few more minutes. So, you know, what was really funny, too, about Ray Thompson's surprise phone call that day was he says, you know, I don't know how this ties into the news of the day, but I just thought, you know, I'd share that little story. But the thing is, Evelyn, his story was timed perfectly because the Democrats want to subsidize Obamacare. They want taxpayer dollars to go straight to the insurance companies, whether people use the insurance or not. And what President Trump is saying is, hey, how about if I just give the American people their money back and they can figure out how they want to use their own money and actually use it for health care? The Democrats want to give the money to the insurance companies, whether you use it for health care or not. So I actually thought his maternity care coverage story was perfectly analogous to what the businessman in chief in the White House right now is trying to do with health care.
Yeah, and the whole concept of that is wise. I mean, you leave the money in the hands of the consumer, and they will determine what are best practices and best products or whatever. They will spend it far more frugally than government agencies will. And that's how come our healthcare industry is in such bad shape, is because it's left the private sector behind. It's become almost a complete government entity. And you know how well government does things. And it's... you know, if nationalized health care is such a great idea, you know, why don't we hear a lot of great stories from all the countries who have nationalized health care or socialized medicine? We don't hear many great stories about those because they aren't that great.
That's right. That's right. In fact, Canada, there's a story that LifeSite News published, I think, last week, where they said that basically more and more Canadians are being forced into assisted suicide because of the lack of health care available in Canada, which is like, you know, they love to talk about their they used to love to talk about their socialized medicine, not so much anymore. But yeah, people are choosing to end their lives because they can't get care in the socialized medicine system of Canada. Crazy, absolutely crazy. But of course, the ones that have enough money, they'll just make a little road trip down here to Montana and other American cities to get the care instead. But what happens when Obamacare and the government destroys health care so badly in America that Canadians can't even come down here to get the care? I guess they go to some Mexican city, they go to Thailand. Where do you go? Where do you go? All right, Evelyn Pyburn, always great insight. Thank you so much for your time. Make sure you sign up for the Big Sky Business Journal Hot Sheet if you haven't yet already. You'll get the news in your inbox every Sunday/Monday morning. And then check out the print edition as well. Even more information in there.
From Mondakistan to the Flathead, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, Finley, what do you think? Are you ready for a debate on this Monday morning? Finley, you want to have a good fiery debate?
Oh, yeah, I'm ready.
So I got a great note from former Congressman Denny Reber, when it comes to being the statewide member of Congress, I think he's the longest serving ever statewide member of Congress. Obviously, when you break it down by district, that can be different. But in terms of the one lone member representing the whole state. But anyway, last week, I think, Finley, I think it was you and I, we were discussing the filibuster and why, okay, we don't want to see the filibuster go away, but it may be time for the filibuster to go away. And the point that I think you and I agreed on, correct me if I'm wrong here, the point that you and I basically agreed on was like, okay, look, and you looked at it from a Gen Z perspective, which was Gen Z showed up for Trump, Gen Z showed up for the Republicans. But I tell you what, Gen Z, they're young, impressionable voters. If the Republicans don't deliver now, they are done with Gen Z moving forward. And so that's where then I made the point, which is why, look, we don't want to see the filibuster go away, but look, this government shutdown that we just saw, 43 days, the Democrats shut down the government, they will bring everything to a halt again at the end of January. The next time there's a big funding battle, the next time there's a big government spending fight, they want to drive us trillions of dollars deeper into debt. The Republicans have to stop that. But they never will be able to as long as the Democrats have the filibuster. And so anyway, Congressman Danny Rehberg sent me a message. He says, I think this came in. Yeah, this was late Friday. He says, when you're willing to dedicate a bunch of on-air time to debate with you or any of your co-hosts or listeners about why eliminating the filibuster rule is a stupid idea, give me a call, no holds barred. And he said, yeah, I'm sure it will light up your phone lines. Because, yeah, there'll be a lot of people that will want to argue about it. But so anyway, Finley, I just thought about it this morning. I was like, Danny, you should call in today, maybe right now, maybe in the 8 o'clock hour, maybe the 9 o'clock hour, because I think you're just with us for today until your next time that you're guest hosting, right?
Yeah, that's right. And come on, Danny. I like you, but I'll gladly argue with you on this issue. And I think, though, you said it very well, Aaron, but just kind of the core Gen Z perspective on this issue is we just want to live in a country where government can actually get things done. Hey, even if we lived in a world where Democrats got a landslide, I want the Democrats to be able to pass their legislation, too. I mean, if you're democratically elected, you should be able to pass legislation. I don't think that's a same for Republicans, same for Democrats. I don't think that's a radical idea at all.
Well, I think the phone lines are ringing there. So if you want to grab that caller, I'll filibuster some time here while you snag that caller on the phone lines. But no, when it comes, our founders set up our government because they didn't want people to be able to get things done. So I would make that point. They didn't want it to be easy to grow government. They didn't want it to be easy for government to get more involved in your day-to-day life. But where are we at as a country right now? We've got way too much government. We've got too much government. I was listening to Charlie Kirk's book from back in the day. I think Charlie Kirk, when he wrote that book at like 22 years old, he of course was assassinated at 32, right? And they used to go to college campuses with the bumper stickers, big government sucks. And anyway, but so specifically, the reason, our government was set up so that it was harder to get things done because they didn't want government to grow. But my point is this, is, okay, well, now what do we need to do? We need to undo some things. And what the filibuster has turned into now is the Democrats and then one or two sellout Republicans have used the filibuster to block us from undoing any of this craziness, from undoing this massive debt. And so, but the bigger picture is I think what we'll find is that Congressman Danny Rehberg and I, maybe Finley, maybe you, that we actually agree on why the filibuster has been so important and why the filibuster has been so necessary. And if you think things are bad right now in the last 4 years of the Biden regime, the Biden tester regime, imagine how much worse it would be had we not had a filibuster. to at least rein that in to a certain extent. And so I would totally acknowledge that. But anyway, we've got Congressman Denny Rehberg on the phone lines right now. Denny, great to hear from you, and thanks for calling in. I appreciate your note.
You bet. It's always fun to talk to you. I was reading the paper this morning. I saw that Inverness won the six-man football tournament, and you probably don't know who the most famous quarterback out of Inverness is or was.
I don't. It's CJI now.
Eric Iverson.
He was an Inverness quarterback, huh? Wow.
No, he actually, his mom and dad split. His mom taught Spanish in Polson, so he ended up transferring to Polson and was their quarterback.
He was the lead pirate.
Goes back a long ways. And they beat Grass Range and Winnet, which my wife's family, the Petroleum County, Fergus County line went right down the middle of their two houses at on the Tegan Ranch. And so half the family went to Grass Range and half the family went to Winnet to high school.
Oh,
how
man.
Weird is that?
Hey, speaking of high school football, man, what about Frenchtown taking out Billings Central? Everybody just assumed that when it came to Class A championship, that Billings Central was going to annihilate whoever ended up making it into that state championship. Frenchtown, their lead quarterback, I think, got injured and pulled out of the game. And this freshman quarterback, as a friend of mine pointed out, ended up being a gunslinger. This freshman kid at Frenchtown apparently was just a running and gunning, and Frenchtown won. I think the score was like 31-21 or something like that. So, and,
well, you want another piece of trivia?
Go for it.
Who was the coach of Frenchtown when they were winning state tournaments year after year?
Was it a Roscoe or was it a Houck? Was it a Houck?
It was a Roscoe. It was Tim Roscoe.
The brother, right?
Yeah, little brother.
Brother of former Governor Mark Roscoe. Okay, yeah, I knew there was that Frenchtown connection.
He was a stud.
The other interesting thing about Frenchtown is, you know, their star, I think, running back got ejected the week before playing Whitefish and wasn't allowed to play in the championship game. So you're facing Billings Central for one, this powerhouse Billings Central, and then your star running back is out, who, you know, was basically scoring all the yardage for him the week before when Whitefish only lost by 3 points. And yet, look at the way the rest of the team stepped up. And then they lose their quarterback. And then this freshman gunslinger basically helps them win the state championship. I mean, that's pretty crazy.
That's pretty cool. You know, I'm always conflicted because our ranch has not moved. We have the ranch in the same spot it's been since, you know, my great-grandfather's day. And my son went to Central. My daughter, oldest daughter, went to Senior, and my youngest daughter went to West, all living in the same home.
School choice is a beautiful thing, isn't it? Like, you know, what's best for one kid may not be best for another kid. So that's the beauty of school choice.
Yep.
Well, Danny, we haven't even gotten to the filibuster yet, but that's okay because we can – if you can – do you want to join us heading into the 8 o'clock hour as well?
Whatever you want.
Let's do
your
it.
Choice. Yeah. I was headed to coffee with my group. Dwight McKay is actually one of the ones that has coffee on Monday mornings.
Hey, that's right.
Downtown Billings.
Tell Grizzly Adams we said hello. Has he still got that beard? Is he still running deep cover?
Oh, you know, he really can't grow a beard. You know, Phyllis Burns has moved back east. He has a touch of dementia. And so we got her on the plane, and as we were going through her stuff, my wife and I helped move her. I found a cassette tape on the Missouri School of Auctioneering.
Wow. Hey, hold that thought, former Congressman Denny Rehberg. Stand by, quick break, and then we'll talk more after this. Plus, we got a caller from Kalispell.
Fox Sports Update.
Hey, listen up. Hey, before we do all the celebration stuff, I'm so proud of you guys, man.
Amen.
Tough couple weeks. You made us proud. You guys made us proud, man.
Dallas Cowboys head coach Brian Schottenheimer in the locker room with his players just 11 days after the death of Cowboys 24-year-old defensive lineman Marshawn Neyland, who took his own life. The Cowboys scored a galvanizing 33-16 win over the Raiders in Las Vegas.
Here's Lamb wide open, backs in for the touchdown. End zone, touchdown Cowboys. Ferguson, Prescott able to step into it. It's got Pickens, good move. Nice cutback and a touchdown. Prescott, wide open, touchdown grab. This time, Flanoy.
On ABC at ESPN, Dak Prescott threw four touchdown passes in the Cowboys' 33-16 win against the Raiders. Dallas improved its record to 4-5-1. Las Vegas is now 2-8. The Jets are benching quarterback Justin Fields in favor of Tyrod Taylor. The Falcons are turning to Kirk Cousins, with Michael Penix Jr. possibly done for the season with a knee injury. Bengals receiver Jamar Chase is appealing a one-game suspension for spitting on Steelers defensive back Jalen Ramsey. NBA Monday, the Detroit Pistons won again, 10th in a row. Detroit improved its record to 12-2 with a 127-112 win over Indiana. The Pacers, who went seven games in the finals last season with Oklahoma City, have the worst record of the NBA, 1-13. The reigning champion Thunder, 14-1 after a 126-109 win over the Pelicans. Six straight wins for OKC. The Bulls snapped the Nuggets' seven-game win streak, 130-127. San Antonio Spurs star Victor Wembanyama is going to miss a few weeks because of a strained left calf muscle. I'm Jared Max.
Get more on the Fox Sports app and foxsports.com.
This is House Call for Health. Flu season is here, and doctors are warning parents to keep an eye out for other viruses. Kristen Barrett, a pediatrician with Cleveland Clinic, says parents should be aware of respiratory syncytial virus, also known as RSV. She says it infects the lower respiratory tract, including the lungs and bronchioles, and that RSV is highly contagious, usually spread through respiratory droplets or direct contact with someone who's sick. The virus puts babies and children under age 2 in danger if they're infected. Symptoms include a runny nose, congestion, coughing, sneezing, fever, wheezing, and in severe cases, difficulty breathing. To limit the risk of catching RSV, Barrett suggests parents wash their children's hands, sanitize surfaces, and keep them away from anyone who's sick. Immunizations are also available for babies and certain children. Barrett notes if a child does get sick with RSV, they can typically recover at home. For more health news, go to foxnewshealth.com. House Call for Health, I'm Lisa Brady. Fox News.
This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, so this is really fun. So we are actually going to save the great filibuster debate. Congressman Denny Rehberg, well, he's still with us right now, but he's actually going to call back later also. He's going to join us for the 9 o'clock hour of the show. So that way, Finley, me, and Denny can all discuss, maybe even debate the filibuster, and is it time to do away with the filibuster? But Denny is still on the phone lines with us here for just a few minutes left here this hour of the show. And we've got John in Kalispell on the phone lines. John, did you have a quick question or comment or thought on the filibuster? And Denny said, don't hold back. He is happy if folks challenge him on this topic.
Well, here is the issue that I have. First of all, if you look at our founding forefathers and how they created each body of government, and you have the House, every 2 years it's elected. You have the Senate, every 6 years each individual senator is elected. And the reason that was is to slow the role of government in our lives and not be hasty and not allow the populace, by popular or, in my opinion, potentially anarchist desires, to change the actual form of government in which we run under. However, you look at the misgivings that have taken place, in my opinion, when they amended the Constitution to allow a populist vote of U.S. senators and not keep it with the state legislative body.
That's what threw it all out of whack.
Those senators.
So that's what
exactly
threw it all out of whack.
And also, correct, and also remove those individuals. But because of the corruption in Montana itself and out of Butte with Senator Clark and the Democrats, the populace of the United States voted by state to amend the Constitution, giving popular vote to the senators, which then you look at now what has taken place with billions and billions of dollars thrown into elections. And all this is oh my gosh, what, how many hits can I get on Twitter?
And that, and yeah, and especially in these U.S. Senate races. In fact, and John, thanks for the call. In fact, former Congressman Denny Rehberg, you saw that firsthand. So, Denny, we've got a couple of minutes, only about 2 minutes here this hour of the show, and then we can't wait to talk to you more after your coffee coming up later in the 9 o'clock hour. But what do you want to tell folks across Montana about why we need to keep the filibuster in place?
It protects the minority. And I'll always go back to the Electoral College or the way the senators are elected right now. It gives us the opportunity when we are in the minority to have a voice. And I'll guarantee, I'm old enough that it probably may not happen in my lifetime, but it will, that the Republicans are feeling their oats right now. They're pretty happy to be in the majority in the Senate, but I guarantee the pendulum will swing back against the Republicans eventually because, one, we take advantage of the power, say stupid things, and unfortunately then we lose the majority, and the filibuster is the only ability that we have as a minority, especially a state like Montana, to have any kind of voice at all.
What about when Finley says, look, if the Republicans don't deliver, you lose the majority anyway, and then the Democrats are just going to put the take out the filibuster when they take power anyway?
Okay, don't take this wrong, because I'm 100% with Donald Trump, but he's very selfish when it comes to wanting to do away with filibuster, because he wants control right now. And that is not thinking to the future, to when he is not president anymore. We'd like to have some of the things that he's suggesting to be able to be passed in the Senate, but it's not always going to be that way. And if you do away with the filibuster, just ask Harry Reid how he liked the fact that we were able to then appoint Supreme Court justices out from under the filibuster rule.
Yeah, that's right. They already changed it on judges. Yeah, they already changed it on judges, so why not on everything else? Well, Denny, so great to hear from you. Can't wait till we have the great filibuster debate coming up later in the 9 o'clock hour.
From the
Mommy, can I sit in the front seat just this one time? Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
How do airplanes fly? What's in this box? What does this thing do?
Kids are curious about everything, including guns. Learn how to store your gun securely and make your home safer at nfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by N Family Fire, Brady, and the Ad Council.